Hi, everybody. I'm going to get into the episode in just a minute, but I just wanted to give you a heads up that this will partially be a memorial episode for a piercer we lost named Deacon Matheson, Canadian piercer. And I want to just kind of give everybody the heads up. I don't want to trauma dump on anybody. I'm going to put some timestamps in the description. I'm going to have all the memorial things towards the end of the episode. Before that, myself and Lola, we talk about a bunch of just really fun piercer stuff. So if you want to hang out and just listen to some piercer stuff, we'd love to have you listen to the first big chunk of the episode. But the back end chunk of the episode is going to just be talking about some sadness, some mental health issues, and I think that those topics are really important to talk about as well. There are a lot of piercers that we've lost over the last few years under different circumstances. Carla Grimes and Dave Kelso, Alicia, Deacon, and a long list of others. And Some of those circumstances are not ones that we saw coming, and we just couldn't be prepared for. So it's an important issue to talk about, mental health, especially in our tiny little community. So I hope you stay until the end. But I've got much more upbeat stuff to start the episode with, so hopefully you're going to stick with me. But I'm going to put timestamps down in the description for you. You're listening to the Piercing Wizard Podcast, and I'm your host, Ryan Ouellette. I'm a professional body piercer with 20 years experience. I travel around the world teaching technique and safety classes, and I'm a member of the Association of Professional Piercers. Listen in as I talk to my friends and colleagues about our industry so we can all stay sharp. Hello. Welcome back to yet another Piercing Wizard Podcast. And I think I am out of ideas, so I asked Lola what she is interested in talking about. So I think today is going to be kind of Lola's episode, and I'm just kind of along for the ride. Oh, hey there, Lola.
Hi. So this week, the topic of discussion is going to be walk-ins, the return, the revenge, walk-ins part two. During COVID and before COVID, actually, in a lot of instances, many studios worked private bookings. I offered private bookings prior to COVID, albeit in not quite as strict a fashion. And then private only bookings, one-on-one piercings throughout the duration of COVID. I carried that over long after the pandemic. I don't really want to say ended because it's not like it just ended, but tapered down and life returned more back to normal. And then in the winter of last year, so maybe 6 months ago, 5 months ago now, I started seeing walk-ins again, which I hadn't done for over 4 years at that point, and which my apprentice had never done. So that's been an interesting experience. And I just thought it would be an interesting conversation to look at the changing dynamics of how we manage our workflows, what maybe necessitates walk-ins, what maybe necessitates private bookings, and how I work is more of a hybrid now between the two. And I know that you've been in a similar position. You were almost exclusively walk-ins prior to COVID, I think, for a very, very long time, for the majority of your career, and then switching very, very harshly to walk-ins only, and you're still, appointments only. And you're still doing appointments only now. So both of those changes have had a really big effect on how we practice at work. And I think the same is true kind of industry-wide. A lot of piercers are making tweaks and changes or wondering if they should. So that's what I wanted to talk about today.
Well, so I operated for nearly 20 years walk-in only.
Skin looks fantastic.
Thank you. Well, my girlfriend bought me a really nice moisturizer. So 20 years of basically exclusively walk-in, the only appointments I was doing would be for like scarification and things like that in my non-piercing hours. But I was doing probably the first 10 years of my studio, I did 6 days a week myself without really like counter staff, things like that. Once I started to be at a point where I could bring in more staff and I could actually pay them, then it kind of turned into like, well, yes, we have walk-ins available every day, but if you wanted to get a specific piercing from a specific piercer, you could kind of reserve a time for it, but that was few and far between. It would be like, oh yeah, you know, if you definitely want to get pierced by Ryan and not Jonah, or Aaron and not Ryan, or whatever, you could kind of, you know, have a certain time for it. But it was really just like walk-ins were king. And I think that both models can benefit somebody, but it's not always the client. It's not always the piercer, but there's always a benefit that would drive you towards one or the other. For COVID, I think the big benefit was the safety aspect, you know, the being able to manage it a little bit easier from the staff side of it. So you could kind of maximize PPE, try to reduce your risk to yourself, to the clients, whatever. But now that I think a lot of people want to move on from that chapter in their life, they want that normalcy of just like, but I just want to be able to walk in. I just want. And I don't see it as a negative on their part, but I think that there are so many benefits to appointment only for studios, and for like quality of life for the staff, that I'm finding it difficult to go back to accommodating any walk-ins, even if it's very clear that there is a client base out there that really wants the walk-in model to return.
I actually took my current model for walk-ins from Platinum Piercing in Stockholm. I've guested there a couple of times pre-COVID, and the system that they had, I actually really liked. And I think it's a system that worked really well in Stockholm in Sweden because of the nature of the typical consumer, the typical person is a little bit more reserved, a little bit quieter, not quite as pushy in some respects as clients in certain areas can be.
Less and American.
You said it. Appointments would be all through the week. There would be appointments and bookings every day, except on Saturday, it would be walk-ins only. And at the end of the day, I'm sure I'm not imagining this, Simon, the piercer, the owner, would just, I think he might have had a bell. I don't know if I imagined the bell, but I would be there and he would be like, right, that's it. We're shutting. That's it. We're closed. Everyone's got to leave. And I was like, I love this. So like, if I could live in a world where I could just tell everyone to get out at the end of the day, I was like, oh, this is like my fantasy. Cause I don't really live quite in an area where you could do that. And it would be completely socially normal to be like, yeah, we're shut. That's it. The shop's shut. And I know that in America, that would be almost unthinkable in certain studios to be like, right, that's it. You all got to hit the roads, come back tomorrow, we're shut. And it's like, it, you know, shows culturally how different people react to different sets of instructions. But it worked really well. And before COVID, I did work appointment only and I saw bookings when I had time, when I was free. So moving back to walk-ins after being private for so long, I thought, I'm going to give this a try. I'm going to try just doing walk-ins on Saturdays. And I actually had a really specific reason for that. Saturdays, for me, like for most piercers, used to be my highest earning day. You could make up what you'd made for the whole rest of the week on a Saturday. It was a really, really valuable day. And then last autumn, we had a period of 2 months where Saturday was our lowest earning day, consistently for 2 months. And what was happening was clients were block booking the Saturdays weeks in advance. And then because we have quite a generous cancellation policy, because it really helps us prevent no-shows, which is always preferable for me, clients would cancel at the last possible minute. And this isn't one particular person. This is dozens and dozens of unique individuals. They would book the Saturday, block it up. And then on the Friday night or the Saturday morning, everyone would cancel. And then we weren't seeing walk-ins, so we didn't have any clients to see. And so Saturday would end up being dead. We would make no money. We would make a loss. And this happened for months. And I think when there's a problem that you're presented with for months and months that's affecting your business negatively, you have to make changes and alterations. So obviously you go through the thought process, do I have to make my cancellation policy stricter? Should I send reminders? Should I change how far in advance I'm letting people book? And then eventually I was like, I think the simplest solution is just have Saturday be a walk-in day. It's the highest day where people want last minute availability. It's the day that the most people cancel because their plans have changed and they're doing something else now. So why not just give the clients the flexibility that they seem to want and just say, whoever wants to turn up on a Saturday, I'll appear, see no problem. And I was really, really nervous about it for a lot of reasons. I hadn't done walk-ins in years. I had no idea how it would affect the income that I'd been making on Saturdays. But since doing that, my Saturdays have all continuously been healthy and strong again because of that change. So it was a gamble, but it did pay off. And so for me, that worked out well by responding to the needs that my clients were signaling to me that they had.
Yeah, I've been tempted to do something similar because we have so many conversations. You tell me about the things that are successful or less than successful that you're trying out in the shop. Saturday is also the day I pay bills with, basically. But my Saturdays have been really consistent over the last several years, really, since we've been in this appointment-only model. I think during So like my 2021 was a stronger financial year than my 2019 was. So I had a better year 1 year into COVID than I did the year prior to COVID. And for whatever reason, we could deep dive on that in a lot of different ways later. But 2022, I noticed not a significant drop, but I noticed starting to get into that fatigue of appointment only life for clients. Like some of them were just like, look, yeah, I got it in 2020 and 2021 if you needed that kind of system. But now I would really like to normalize my life. But for me, it was a predictable amount of income. It was like, we have X appointments in a day, most of them are being filled. It's predictable to be able to pay bills, pay the staff, invest in jewelry, make other investments in the shop and whatever else. 2023 started to notice kind of something similar, like on Saturdays, people like my system, my appointment only system, you have a availability listed on the website 3 weeks in advance. So you can book 3 weeks in advance. My cancellation policy was essentially, you need to give us 24 hours notice. Otherwise, there's a fee. But that was because people would go on the website when their enthusiasm was high. They would book an appointment for a Saturday, 3 weeks out. It would come down to like the day of, and they'd be like, oh yeah, I want to do something else with my Saturday. I want to go to a movie, or I want to go shopping, or I want to whatever. And they would want to cancel last minute. So that's why we had to kind of set that 24-hour minimum of like, well, we need to be able to like refill that space. So we need you to cancel or reschedule with enough time that somebody else realistically would grab that spot, because like our client base had been trained to do everything through the website and everything's appointment only, and we don't really have a lot of short-term availability like walk-in style. And I got some negative reviews because of it. I think I've heard other shops mention that too. There are shops out there where somebody has never technically been a client. They've never actually came into the studio to make a purchase, to get a piercing, but they've left you a negative review because you were appointment only and they wanted the convenience of a walk-in kind of option for them. So I get the frustration. I had those panic moments as an owner where it was like, man, if I stay appointment only, am I screwing up? Am I going to lose more and more clients? Because it kind of felt like at a point I was the only appointment only shop in my area. I'm still appointment only. My income is still what I would consider strong. I still have fully booked days. I would say that a lot of the weekday appointments are still kind of left up in the air. Like we'll have some weekdays that can be half booked or, pretty quiet days. But overall, I think that it's the right move for us. But because of that concept of like, well, when it was walk-in world, I could do 20 or 25 unique clients in a day. An appointment only, we only have about a dozen appointments available per day. So I know that I have more that I can do in a day than appointment only can manage. So we've been kind of trying to do a hybrid now, and I think part of that is being inspired by what's working for you and your shop. So Lily, our counter person, has the flexibility where if somebody calls or somebody walks up to the door and they're like, well, I just want to come in and check out jewelry, or can you do a jewelry change, or do you have time to maybe do this new piercing? And if we have time, we're doing it now. So I'll still have those dozen appointments on a Saturday, but it's really common lately where I've been taking 3 or 4 or 5 extra little things here and there, and I'm trying to find the comfort zone.
Yeah, I think that that's the key, is finding something that works well for you and your clients as much as possible, because I loved being appointment only. That suits me very well. Being walk-ins definitely pushes me out of my comfort zone. But by doing that, my business has been more successful. So I think that it is important sometimes to kind of stick your head out of your hole in the ground and do things that push you a little bit outside of your comfort zone. And what worked for someone isn't going to work for someone else. So similarly, one of the reasons I love doing appointment only was that I worked alone a lot of the time. I spent an entire year just working by myself, and doing walk-ins at that capacity for me wouldn't have been possible. Obviously, you can't have your door open for people to freely come in the reception while you're in the back. And if you have a personal issue, dentist appointment, doctor's appointment, something that you have to leave the shop in the middle of the day to do, you can then get bad reviews from people if they're like, oh, they weren't there, they weren't open when they said they would be open for doing walk-ins. So I think whatever way you do it, there's always going to be that person that's not happy. I have more availability now than I've had in years. And I'll still get the odd person that's not happy. And I think remembering as well that you can't please everyone is really important. And your business model is unique to you. And like how you say, you're the only shop around that does appointments. There will be so many people that love that about you. Like, I have so many clients who are like, I love that I can book a set time when I come in. There's nobody else here. It's just me. I can browse. No one's breathing down my neck. I have so many clients that love that experience, that I would never, ever want to go back to just doing walk-ins or have that be the dominant part of my business. But being able to say, Saturday afternoons, free and easy, come in, have a browse, have a chat, maybe get pierced, that seems to have been responded to really well. And I feel like it's also been an important part of my apprentice's learning process as well, because he'd never done walk-ins before. And I think that to have a well-rounded apprenticeship, and obviously I want my apprentice to work for me long-term, but were he to ever work somewhere else, that would be a really big part of his training that would be missing, I think, if he wasn't capable of working with walk-ins. Because working with walk-ins is really different, in my opinion, to working with appointment-only bookings, because the clients are in a completely different headspace. When someone comes in for an appointment, in my experience, they're like 90% ready to get pierced. They've researched your business, they've booked in, they know roughly what you do, they know roughly what they want, and you're kind of most of the way there. Whereas when a client comes in as a cold walk-in off the street, they're maybe like 20% ready to get pierced. And they may not get pierced that day, and that's fine. But for clients that want to, it's a much bigger hill to climb getting them to that point that they're fully informed, that they're able to properly consent and get the work done. So getting experience doing that extra work, being able to have a proper meeting of the minds between yourself and your client when they've walked in cold off the street, knowing nothing about what you do, I think that's a really important skill. And it's one that I spent years working on that I then stopped offering. And now I'm back to that. So it's interesting for me getting the wheels turning again, remembering what that was like, and for my apprentice managing as well and building up all of those skills, I think has been a really interesting experience.
Well, you probably had like a skill set that I think might be a little bit more rare today, because we've talked about it before. Like, we're grizzled young vets. Like, I've been at this for 25 plus years. You've been at this for, I don't know, 12 years or something.
14. And,
well, okay, fine. It's not a competition. but like, you were used to it and you were comfortable with it. We've talked a lot before about how we're kind of baffled that there's that pocket of piercers where they might have started during that pandemic time, where their only experience might have been appointment only. So for them, it might feel a lot more intimidating at the concept of walk-ins. It might feel like more laborious than they're ready for, because like you said, if people have an appointment, that means they booked through your website, means they've been to your website, means they've hopefully maybe read a little bit of your website. So they're probably going to be, like you said, more prepared for their appointment. Walk-ins, they might just be walking down the street and being like, "Oh, hey, a piercing shop. Oh, hey, what do you want to get? Oh, I don't know." Then it can turn into the whole like, "Well, I don't have an ID," or like, I don't know what piercing I want, or I had no idea it would cost that much. All those different things that can come up when it's a little bit more spontaneous.
And also clients not really listening to the answers that you give them because they're excited. That happens a lot with walk-ins. I find that when a person or a group of friends comes in, because again, I didn't see groups before, I just saw individuals, and they're all asking you questions and they're all speaking at the same time. One of them asks you a question, you go to answer it, the other one cuts you off and talks over you. That happening over and over and over again, it's far more stimulating and it's easier for you to start to get a little bit frustrated in those situations because you're used to clients that ask questions and listen to you and that are far more engaged in the process because they're not in that state of, oh, I've just walked in, I'm maybe going to get something done, and they're really excited. It's a totally understandable state to be in, but you, as the person that's there providing the service support and the information about the jewelry in the studio, you have to be able to cope with that. And if you've only ever had clients that are ready to listen to you and ready to speak with you, and now you're dealing with like a swarm of people all asking you questions at once. I mean, you were there in my studio a few weeks ago, and at one point there was eight people in my studio. There has never been eight people in my studio in the entire duration of the time it's been open. And you just have to roll with it and manage it. And in those situations, I think it is a bit more challenging to make the kind of sales that you want to make because you can't give that focused attention that you're used to.
Yeah, there's a lot of benefits to both sides of it. There's a certain kind of energy to walk-in style piercing that in some ways I miss, but in a lot of other ways I don't miss, because when it was walk-in only, yeah, I could pierce 25 people in a day, but it was because I had to pierce 25 people in a day, because all of those 25 people were probably spending a little bit less. Because they weren't the kind of clients who were maybe like there for my style of piercing, the style of piercing that is really heavily marketed on social media today. A lot of that requires time. A lot of that requires one-on-one energy with a person, whether it's a counter staff or whether it's a piercer or whatever. But that kind of magic, like, I know that there are going to be plenty of shops out there where they're going to be like, "Oh, we could totally still do the same thing with walk-in." But it's like, yes, but maybe it's because you have eight staff or something like that. In a studio like yours and a studio like mine, where it's usually one piercer and one counter staff, if you want to give people a certain experience that makes them feel okay, makes them feel like it's worth it to spend, I don't know, $100, $200, whatever on a piercing, you really have to give a lot to them. You have to make them feel satisfied and happy with it. And a lot of that requires time and energy. And with walk-in style, with it being a lot more fast-paced, I don't know that I can give them the same level of energy and the same level of information and whatever. So like I don't see us dropping appointments. I could see us maybe trying to dip our toes a little bit more into a hybrid style. I think it helps counter staff maybe grow in a way where they might have the flexibility to just like do more styling conversations, jewelry conversations, things like that. It might help younger piercers, people earlier in their career, to be able to have maybe a little bit more of like a unpredictability to their day. Appointment only can start to feel pretty soulless after a while. I know that Evan and I have talked about that in the shop before, where there were points, especially when we were like at peak efficiency for appointment only, when every day was fully booked and every day kind of felt like the same thing. It's like, okay, you're going to do probably a fairly similar piercing with a fairly similar jewelry conversation with a fairly similar aftercare conversation, and you're just going to do that every half hour for the rest of the day. It didn't feel the same as that frenetic energy of a walk-in day, but I think both can be beneficial. So maybe finding something in the middle will be the future for our shop or other shops.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of skills and tips and tricks that go into conversing with clients that are doing walk-in compared to appointment only. And one of those things that I went over with my apprentice when we were making that shift is when you're doing walk-in and there's people coming in and out and there's people coming in for information, you don't have that same one-on-one captive engagement where you can have a bit more of an in-depth conversation. Because you have to be conscious of the fact that there's a lot of people that are needing help and assistance, and some people are just making inquiries. So if someone says, "Why is this jewelry so expensive?" you have to have an answer that's not a 15 to 20 minute talk about jewelry quality. You need to be able to distill that information down so that it's understandable. So it's not just that because that's what it costs, you know, but it can't just be because, oh, it's really good quality. It has to be, you know, so you have to find a way of distilling that information down into something that's a little bit more bite-sized. And if you can get into it and have a proper discussion with them, if there's time for that, wonderful. But if not, you have to have answers for these questions that are going to be suitable to a more fast-paced walk-in exchange that are going to make sense. And another thing that I discovered that I remembered that I haven't done in years that's actually easier to do with a group of people is where you get to do group aftercare. Like, I don't know if you remember doing this, but say when there's
That's the
three people
best.
and they're all getting a helix piercing. So this is a positive, just so it's not all negative stuff. A positive is when you've got three clients, they're all waiting for a helix piercing, whether they know each other or don't know each other. You can say, "Hey, why doesn't everyone come in here? And we're going to go over the aftercare for this." And you can just run through the aftercare for various for a piercing with various clients, and then ask each of them individually, one on one, when you get that personal time with them, if there were any questions, if there's anything they didn't understand. That's one of those things where you're just like, "Ah, oh, this is so much more efficient than explaining
Yeah.
this three separate times."
In an appointment only sense, my favorite thing is when somebody comes in and they're like, "Oh, can my friends come in? They're the next two appointments after me." And I'm like, "Yep, totally, bring them in," because it's like then I have this block of time and it's like, "Oh, I know I'm definitely not going to need that full amount of time because now there's the overlap. I can talk to maybe all three of them about jewelry because they might all be getting the same thing." And then I love the sentence. I love being able to use the phrase, "Oh, I'm just going to walk everybody together through the aftercare at the end. Is that okay?" Great. And then it's like, okay, I've shaved an extra 20 minutes, 30 minutes off of my day, and I love it. Let's start to wind down this section.
Okay, will you just clip out the part at the beginning where I tell you have beautiful skin because I don't think you've got my joke.
What was the was That's not a joke. I do have beautiful skin.
Yeah, but you said that you'd been piercing for 20 years, and I was saying you had beautiful skin because you don't look that old.
I got it.
Well, you
It's because it
didn't
wasn't that funny. It was a chuckle-based joke,
Oh, it's
but
definitely not that it wasn't funny. That's not definitely not what the problem is. It couldn't possibly be that my jokes aren't funny.
no, definitely not. Anyway, so yeah, like there are other things about COVID that I think were maybe positives for shops that made us kind of stronger as businesses. I still have people kind of vocalizing that whole phrase of like, "Oh, I feel so clean here. You know, it feels so safe." Like I'm still wearing, I'm not wearing a face shield or anything at this point, but I'm still wearing a face mask the entire time that I interact with clients. And I think that people just appreciate that in the sense where when you go to like different Asian communities or Asian countries where like just out of politeness, they wear face masks during cold and flu season. And that's kind of why I'm wearing it. I'm wearing it for politeness. I still feel like it's a great idea for a piercer to wear a face mask when they pierce because you want to talk and you want to communicate and you don't want to be like micro spitting all over your client. So like I still like to wear a face mask and clients still say, "Oh, it's so clean here," and blah 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 blah. And a lot of those things were tightened up during the pandemic. So that I certainly know how to manage my time better through the appointment only system. I think I feel like I know how to manage my staff's time better also. So some benefits to it, but I do kind of miss the energy sometimes. So maybe I'll find a way to welcome a little bit of that more back into my day. But I'm not letting go of appointments just yet.
Well, I think the hybrid style of working that I've got going on just now, I can definitely see myself sticking with for a long time. I think it works really well
It seems like
because,
it does work really well for your shop
yeah.
specifically and your market specifically.
like different markets and different shop setups, they're all going to have different ways of working. I think as long as it makes sense and it's making the best use of staff time, like if you can look at your booking system, whether it's walk-ins or appointment only, and you can see a really big black hole with money or time that's being wasted, then it makes sense to try and reassess what your current situation is to make that a little bit more effective, which is really what my motivation was. And it was a big gamble as well, because I think if we're being honest, you don't have that many cards you can play when it comes to changing your business model with your clients before they get a little bit sick of it. Like you can't be flip-flopping all over the place from one month to the next, because clients learn to book with you a certain way and they generally respect that process. So if you're flip-flopping back and forth between different modes on a regular basis, I can see that being frustrating. So realistically, if you only have the chance every once a year, every couple of years to make a really radical change, then it is a bit of a gamble and a bit of a roll of the dice. But I'm really happy with how it's worked out for me. So I don't know if it gives anybody else a little bit of encouragement to maybe make a change if they feel like it's something that might help their business. Anyway, would you like to go on a date with me on Sunday, the 19th of May? Are you available on that date to date
That's
with me?
very sweet of you, but actually I'm not available because I'll be offering a webinar on Sunday, May 19th. But that was a
Give me
deft
another
segue. Thank you. I'll be doing a Bevel Theory webinar, and I'm trying to stick to offering that at least 2 to 3 times a year because it seems like immediately after I do one and people post about it, I get this tidal wave of people that are like, "Oh, when's your next one? I really want to take it. I'm sorry I missed this last one." So my next Bevel Theory webinar will be available on Sunday, May 19th, 2024. You can sign up now at ryanpba.com. There's a Google form on there. You can give me your info. This is for professional piercers only. So you can be at any point in your career. I just need you to show me that you do work in a shop. So apprentices are welcome. If you're 3 months into piercing, if you're 10 years into piercing, everyone is welcome for this one. But you do need to verify that you're working in a studio, and that can be as simple as you just sending me a screen cap of like your shop's social media, listing your name, website, a certificate, a license, a business card. I'm pretty flexible, but you do need to verify that you're a professional working in a studio because we're going to be talking about piercing. I'll be talking about how to utilize the needle to reduce needle drag. I'll be talking about needle modification. Some people call it needle crushing. We'll be doing a live workshop. So I'll give you a list of some supplies you can have ready, and then we can pierce things together. Nothing living. It'll be like banana peels, foam skin, things like that, but we can kind of dial it in together, and I can show you how to utilize Bevel Theory. So if you're interested in that, you can go ahead and get signed up at ryanpba.com, or you can email me at ryanpba@gmail.com if you have any questions about it. But that's pretty much my favorite class. I think I've done that class more than anything else. I think maybe Safe Practices in the Piercing Room might rival it for how many times I've done it, but I think Bevel Theory is probably my favorite subject to teach at this point.
I think it's a really good class to take if you're someone who primarily pierces with cannula or catheter needles as well, because I pierced with cannula needles for about 6 years, and then transitioned to blade needles. I didn't attend a class like your class. I didn't have any training in using the blade needle. And when you switch over from one working style to the other, it's quite chaotic and messy by comparison, and you can get really varying and inconsistent results switching over to the blade needle. And I think that puts a lot of people off. So if you're experiencing things like skin tearing, where the exit wound of your piercing is looking almost like a keyhole, if you're experiencing excessive bleeding with piercings where you don't think that there should be, it could be an indication that you maybe need a little bit more guidance and support utilizing Bevel Theory. So if that sounds like you, this is a really good class to take, because if I'd have seen it at the time, it would have definitely made my transition easier.
Well, I'm happy to have everybody involved. When Lola says blade needle, that's what an American piercer might just think of as a piercing needle. But realize that in like the great wide world of piercing, there are lots of different needle designs. Wide portions of the world use cannula needles. I wouldn't say that there's anything inherently wrong or unsafe about a cannula needle, but I think that there are just so many advantages to a blade needle to a US style piercing needle. So if you're not familiar with it, this could again be a great class for you to understand the differences and understand how to utilize the tool properly. Because when you're using a tool, and a needle is a tool, You really want to understand how to use it properly so that you can get the most out of it. So I love this class, but again, you can go ahead and sign up at ryanpba.com, and that's going to be Sunday, May 19th, 2024.
Go on a date on the 20th of May.
Yeah, I could be convinced. So another subject that you wanted to talk about, I guess the broadest way to phrase it would be like healthy boundaries for critiques, criticism, input, feedback, whatever. I think when you have a conversation that's one-on-one with a piercer, whether it's face-to-face or whether it's online, if it's a one-on-one conversation, it's a person having a conversation with another person. And I think that that can be a completely different animal than when you just post something blindly or when you comment on something blindly. Like, I don't think it's helpful if you see someone's post and you immediately want to chime in on the comment section to tell them just how wrong they are and how they could be just as right as you if only they tried harder. Or if you put something out there looking for constructive criticism and what you get back is just 20 people tripping over each other to try to prove how right they are and how they're the only one that's right. So what are your thoughts on some of that? Because I know that it can be a big frustration point and kind of one of the frequent reasons why people withdraw themselves from online spaces.
So I remember the first piece of useful critique that I ever got as a piercer from another piercer that I didn't really know. And I think it's always important as well to recognize the differences between two colleagues that are friends, that have a rapport, that have a relationship together, that understand each other's communicating style is completely different from two strangers talking. And two strangers talking in person is completely different from two strangers talking on the internet. Because in all of these different instances, there's different levels of room for misinterpretation of what it is that's being said. So the first piece of useful critique from basically a stranger that I got was maybe in 2011, and it was, you shouldn't post your pictures in black and white. And I was like, why? And they were like, because it looks like you have something to hide. It looks like you're hiding bleeding. It looks like you're hiding redness. It looks like you're trying to hide something. And I had never thought about it in those terms. And I had seen other people posting in black and white. And this was in 2011. So any kind of filtering was like, ooh, cool. I'm going to use a filter and I'm going to look so professional. Like we've all seen that really famous triple forward helix piercing photo.
From Chrissy Scholl, yeah.
Right. It's black and white. And it just like, oh, it looks so mature and artistic. And it was just like,
Noir.
I think that's what I was trying to go for. My work did not look like Chrissy Scholl's work in 2011. But I think that's where I was coming from. And this other piercer was like, no, it looks like you're trying to hide something. It doesn't look good. And I stopped at that point because it helped me realize that. And I thought about it because I saw another piercer giving really similar advice to a younger piercer just a couple of weeks ago on Facebook. And it was a different piercer than the one that gave me advice, but it was the same scenario. And I saw it and I was like, yeah, that's still good advice. That still makes sense. And there are things like that that I think are genuinely like really helpful and useful, and you remember them. But there are so many other instances that I've seen online where I don't really know what either party wanted to get out of the interaction, but you're just watching an argument unravel. And I think that if you're going to give critique or take critique or offer yourself up for critique, the first thing that you should do is be real honest with yourself and ask yourself what you want from the interaction. So if you're putting yourself out there for critique and saying, give me opinions, you're going to get opinions and you have to ask yourself what you want from that. And are you in a space where you can realistically take on board that information and take the useful information from it? And if anybody says something that's maybe a little bit more personal or a bit more hurtful, are you prepared to let that stuff roll off of you? So ask yourself those questions. And as well, if you're giving critique, ask yourself honestly what you want from the critique that you're giving. In what way do you think it's helpful? Like, are you trying to be hurtful to someone? Are you actually genuinely trying to help? Or is this something that has nothing to do with you, that maybe you're actually just better off not saying anything? So I think the first thing is just being real honest with yourself about what you want from the interaction. Because for me, Good critique, helpful constructive critique is where there's a meeting of the minds between two professionals, whether they agree or disagree. There has to be some kind of mutual respect there that allows the information being exchanged to be used constructively. Whereas we've both seen many, many times over the years, someone make a post and 55 comments on the post, and they're actually just arguing over the language in the post. And you're looking at it and you're thinking, and this is something that I said at the self-care talk APP last year in Vegas, was we know when we communicate in person that we all have different styles of communication. All of us have different ways of expressing ourselves. But yet online, everyone somehow seems to forget that. And any one small misinterpretation can result in an enormous amount of conflict. So I think, in my opinion, being honest with yourself about what you want from the give and take of the exchange, making sure that there's a real conscious meeting of the minds professionally, I think are really important when it comes to constructive critique.
Yeah. I used to be active in some of those forum spaces. And there was a generation where it's like, okay, I feel like I can chime in on something and I can be like, okay, hey, this was one helpful little tip or trick that I've picked up over the years that kind of helped me. Let me just kind of drop that information in. If people were asking something specific, like, oh, what do you think I could have done differently with this? I could say, well, have you considered this? Because it would have maybe have this benefit. But I really started to leave those spaces when it turned into a lot of people just trying to like argue for no reason. Like, you're not doing it the exact way that I do it, so that you're an idiot, hang up your needles, and like trying to shame people because it's like, I don't know if they were like hatched out of an egg as the world's perfect body piercer or whatever, but like I had to work for it. I had to grind for it. I had to like ask a lot of questions. I had to be open to a lot of criticism, constructive and not. I had to take a lot of classes. I had to ask peers for input to get better, to kind of learn more. And I think that sometimes in an online space, people can forget that. And they can be a little bit brutal to people who are still on their journey. I don't think that that journey really ever ends. Like, I always want to get a little bit better. And I would just hope that some of the people that are jumping in to those comment sections can kind of remember that perspective of like, well, somebody probably had to help you. You didn't invent body piercing. Like, your name's not Jim Ward. If you had to grow, give somebody else the opportunity to grow also, and maybe don't try to ruin their day just so that your friends can have a laugh and think of like, oh, you're so clever.
Just as a disclaimer, because somebody will point it out, we do both understand Jim Ward didn't
Jim
invent
Ward
body.
did not invent body piercing. No, he just made it awesome.
Yeah, so when it comes to critique, giving feedback, sharing information, I think the key thing is that it's done in earnest. Like, it's done genuinely from a helpful place. And I think that there are some instances where people will say that it is, and you're like, come on, behave yourself. Like, we can all see what's happening here. And it doesn't end as well with piercers that are learning. Like, I had a conversation. In fact, I spoke to a couple of piercers in the past few weeks that are doing classes or teaching classes for the first time or teaching new content for the first time and have been kind of exchanging information about advice when it comes to teaching and managing the classroom and managing the presentation. And we have both seen and both experienced really experienced piercers being openly heckled and disagreed with whilst teaching a class in front of hundreds of people.
Yeah.
Like, piercers with more experience than the two of us put together, probably. We've seen giving instruction in classes, and we've seen someone put their hand up and be like, that's wrong. And you're just like, if that can happen at that level, like, try and just keep in mind and understand that. You might remember a harsh critique that you got, but the person that gave it to you probably won't remember in a couple of years' time, as unfortunate as it is. So it's very important to not take those critiques and carry them around as personal insults for long periods of time, because there are people who have been doing this 20 years longer than you, 20 years longer than me, and they can still stand up in a room full of people and have somebody put their hand up and be like, I think you're wrong about this. Like, there's no point you can get to where that doesn't happen. So I think being able to separate yourself from that a little bit and having the confidence to either be able to agree to disagree respectfully or to stand there and say, no, actually, I think that you're wrong and I'm going to stand by what I did and what I said. Those are the skills that you need to have before you go up in front of a room full of loads of people. Because if there's one place you don't want to fall apart, it's in front of that many people. Like when someone's mean to me on the internet, I can just pretend I don't care and be sad in my flat. But if I'm in front of that many people, even if I feel like totally devastated, I have to be able to pull myself together as a professional and be like, well, you know, this is my opinion. This is where it comes from. Happy to chat about it. Would love to hear your opinion at the end of the class. Like that takes an enormous amount of confidence that I never imagined that I would be able to have. But it's something that you can work on. So I think that that's also an element of critique, is understanding that it never really 100% goes away. And nor should it, I suppose, if we're to continue to learn and get better.
What was the phrase you said last night? Gobshite?
Gobshite. Yeah, you were. I was asking you what you meant when you said somebody was a flibbertigibbet, and you said that like a flibbertigibbet is someone who's maybe like hard to get off the phone because they won't stop talking. They're being a bit of a flibbertigibbet, and I was like, yeah, in Glasgow, that's just a gobshite.
Okay. Well, I love our cultural exchange.
Yeah.
Well, I think that that's a pretty solid episode for people. Do you feel like there's anything else you'd want to include?
No.
Okay. Well, let's do a bit of an episode wrap up, and then I want to say a couple of heavier things, if that's okay with you. So I've been Ryan. I appreciate you listening to the show, and you have been
Hungry.
hungry. Well, you're Lola Slider, and I think you're incredible. And forgive me if this next bit is not articulate, because it's difficult to kind of like say some of this stuff out loud. But we lost another member of our piercing family recently, Deacon Matheson, Canadian piercer. I met Deacon when I did a seminar up in Canada. I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, maybe more, or something like that. But I had kind of like chit-chatted with Deacon a little bit here and there. Always seemed like a really sharp guy, a really smart guy, universally respected by his peers. You could tell that he was really like a leader, looking for maybe like some people to lead, kind of thing. You know, Canada is so spaced out that I think it's sometimes a little bit tougher for people to kind of come together as a community just because of distance. But the internet really brings everybody together. And even if you don't know somebody closely in person, you might know a lot about their life or a lot about their career through the internet. Deacon was one of the people that we interviewed last year at the APP conference. And if people are interested, they can go back and listen to the full episode. It's episode 232 with Deacon Matheson. I'm going to include a couple of like clips from that episode, after I say whatever I'm saying now, just because like I want you to hear his voice and hear how much he cares. My heart really goes out to his partner, Kelly. It would be really impossible to not draw some parallels between their relationship and our relationship, because Kelly lives and works in Tennessee in the US, Deacon up in Ontario, Canada, and they had, you know, a romance across borders, and they had long-term plans and things like that. Deacon left on his own accord, which is difficult to talk about. You know, I respect that if anybody wants to dip out on this episode now, that's fine, because it's tough to hear stuff like this sometimes. It can be, I don't think anybody really likes to use the word triggering at this point, because it's been kind of like used as a punchline too much, but it can be really triggering, and it certainly is for me, because I also had someone really close in my life who left on their own accord. Other people, Dave Kelso. So in a relatively short time period, A fair amount of piercers have left that way. And it's not something where I can just like not talk about it. And you do the whole generic, like, they passed away unexpectedly. It certainly was unexpected, but it's like I think somebody has to kind of start talking about this stuff out loud in like a mental health sense, in like an outreach sense, in like a community care sense, because like it's unbearable for the
Yeah.
people close to them.
Well, I think that you're right to point out that you and I felt an incredible sense of sadness for what Kelly must be going through. Neither of us can fully appreciate what her experience is right now, but given the similarities in our relationships or the trajectories in our relationships as they appeared outwardly, I think that it did really hit home how horrendous this situation must be for Kelly. And I think that both of us thought about it a lot. And I think it really got under our skin to the point where, as you say, you just have to talk about it a little bit. And it's uncomfortable talking about it and it's unpleasant talking about it. But not limited to the three people that you've named in the past 3 years, there are far more as well. And it reminds me of something that Bethra Zumsky said again at the self care talk at APP last year, was that every year there are more and more faces on the remembrance shrine that need to be there, that didn't have to be there. If situations or circumstances had been just a little bit different, they wouldn't be there. And while I don't think that it's fair to say it's ever anybody's fault when something like this happens, I also don't think that we can do nothing and say nothing, given the gravity of the situation and how I think that there does seem to be a real problem. I started therapy last November for the first time, and it was something that you had been encouraging me to do for years, literal years. And I had always been completely resistant to it for a number of reasons. So I understand why it might not be something that you want to do, or might not be something that people want to do. Like, I get it because I pushed it off for years, really vehemently. And eventually, I did get to a point where, for my own reasons, I started doing it. And you never know what's going on with other people. But I think that you have to, at some point, take a chance on yourself and make decisions that are going to benefit your health in lots of different ways, even if it means doing the thing that's uncomfortable and that you don't really want to do or that you don't really think that you need. So if you're one of those people that's like me, that's been told over and over and over again, you need to talk to someone, you need to speak to someone, you can't ignore that forever or push it off forever. You just can't, because things only need to end badly one time, and you do something you can't ever take back. And that's what's really at stake here, you know?
Yeah. If you try to rationalize something in your head about like what pain must someone have felt, we just passed March 15th, which was everybody making their posts about Shannon Larratt's passing. And I remember I was going to do a memorial episode for Shannon at one point, and I really wish I had recorded the conversation that I was starting to plan out with Rachel Larratt. And I said, like, well, I wanted to record something with you and maybe publish it on March 15th. And she was like, I'm happy to record something with you, but we're not going to publish it on the date of his death from that reason. But we'll publish it on maybe the date of his birth to celebrate that instead, because I can't celebrate March 15th. And like, if someone's going into it thinking that nobody wants me here, or I need to end this pain for myself, like the pain stays and it's just carried by all the people who loved you and who miss you. So, try therapy, try anything, try literally just if you have to call a hotline and you talk to a complete stranger at 3 in the morning, like you have to do that because, like, the day you're gone is not going to be a good day for anyone. No one's going to celebrate you leaving. It's just going to leave behind a wake of pain. And it's tough to just see it over and over again. Like, I'm sure that plenty of other industries have those kinds of loss, but I think the Pearson community, like, we hold each other so close, and we really look at each other like a family and a community and all that stuff. So when someone leaves through one choice or one circumstance out of their control or whatever other reasons, the community really feels it and really feels that loss, and it's not a good feeling. So I don't know. You just have to say something. It's, you can't just be like, oh, what a tragedy, and you make a Facebook post, and the next day you just forget about it and move on. Like, you have to talk about it, and you have to, like, the whole reach out to your friends kind of thing. Yes, but you have to be there for yourself too. You have to realize that you're a person, and you have to sometimes do the hard work to take care of yourself and to keep yourself there.
Yeah, I think that that's exactly right.
Anyway, I know that that's tough for people to hear, and if you even made it to this point, I just want to say that, like, you have to keep going. You have to keep going. Like,
It's a
you have
threat.
to keep going.
Let's do. Or so help me.
Yeah, or so help me. Anyway, I think we go into a lot of episodes thinking like we're gonna make some really positive, upbeat energy out there, and then by the end of it, we're just like, thanks for making it through another episode of the Piercing Wizard podcast.
Well, sometimes people need to hear certain things. And if there's one thing that I would like people to hear from this episode, for me, it would be that I really don't give a shit what you've done or what you're going through or what you're feeling or what you think the outcome is going to be. Nothing is going to be better without you being here. Not a single thing. Not one fucking thing. So whatever else that it is that's going on, press pause on it. We'll reevaluate it, but you need to still be here.
Yeah. Ooh. Well, I will leave you with some clips from Deacon's episode. So just content warning, you're gonna hear Deacon's voice. And if that's not something you're ready for, then that's okay. But his episode was episode 232, and he said a lot of great stuff. So I want people to hear it. He meant a lot to the community. Again, my heart goes out to you, Kelly, and we're thinking about you. And who are you, good sir?
My name is Deacon Matheson. I am also a professional piercer, as we all are here. I'm from Kitchener-Waterloo, Ontario, which is in Canada. I've been piercing for a little bit over 20 years. A member of Association of Professional Piercers, and I don't travel to teach seminars, and I have a way shittier beard than you.
It's okay. What's the basic kind of concept that you wanted to talk about? Like, opportunity is a one way to put it for a jumping off point, but how would you phrase it?
Yeah, well, I've always kind of like looked at my career as though I've been like failing upwards in life, right? So it feels like maybe that you don't so much like earn an opportunity, but like you just kind of like you're consistently stumbling into something, or there's a setback that happens, it kind of gets internalized a whole lot. And I think like a lot of things almost kind of get like viewed like for me in like the process of like failure, or like this like weird like non-linear path of success. And as I really kind of was like looking at it and thinking about it, what was really starting to kind of like come together for me is just like that idea of like understanding that certain situations can just be maybe not as ideal as like you really kind of think that they are, and like looking at the motivations internally kind of behind that. So essentially, like you could be in a much worse position, which could actually be better for you like to be in, and kind of being able to have that like mental wherewithal to realize the position that you're in order to kind of galvanize you into action, I think is really important. It's basically kind of where I found myself when I made the option to risk my entire life and life savings to open up the piercing end of the studio that I operate now, as opposed to, you know, just continuing to, you know, be like a wage slave.
And I work to notice, and, you know, I still see people from where I used to work and have some good relationships still, and you know, have even send people there, and I have people sent to me. So I think it's important to sometimes put accounts out there that you can be in those situations and you can split up from places that you've worked and still maintain a fairly cordial relationship with each other. Most of the accounts that we see online, I think, are kind of like blow-ups that have happened, you know?
Yeah, exactly, right.
But that's not normal, or shouldn't be normal.
In an ideal world, for sure, right? Like, yeah. That's the thing when we kind of first started the podcast. We're like, is there anything we want to, like, talk about or not talk about? And, like, there's no point of trauma, like, in this situation at all.
Yeah.
It just
yeah.
basically kind of gets to the point where, you know, essentially, there, in Ontario, the landscape is kind of weird. I almost kind of liken it to, like, old school wrestling.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, like territorial.
Territorial, but there's like a handshake agreement about it. So, you know, there was, for a time, there was maybe a studio that's 20 minutes away from me where, there used to be some ABP members that, like, what do? You ask somebody to be like, can you work less so I can work a day? And other than that, there's really nothing there. So it puts you in this awkward position of, you know, do I stay where I am, or do I have to, like, you know, basically move forward and kind of create my own opportunity?
Right.
And you really bring up something, as well, Lola, like the like having those conversations, mm-hmm. Over like a 20-year piercing career, kind of like yourself, we started off using not good jewelry.
Sure.
Now, obviously, as you were the owner, you can decide that you want to make this move. As an employee, mm-hmm. I have to talk somebody into opening up their wallets and spending more money on jewelry and that. And as you kind of go along, there's been these gradual changes where you have points where, you know, you want things to move and to grow, and you have these ideas and things work in your favor. Right. So, you know, little bit by little bit, things are kind of getting better and improving. But then once you kind of hit that stone wall, it does get to be a little bit of a almost like a point of contention that you kind of, I don't know, like you feel this knot like inside yourself, or like, yeah. how many times do I need to have these same conversations right. over and over and over again before, you know, something bends or breaks?
And maybe sometimes you have to create your own space to do that.
Right. Exactly. When you have an area which is essentially almost underserved, like, because, you know, your environment can't create the level of service that you envision in your head, then that basically kind of falls upon you mm-hmm. in order to create it. I was personally lucky enough just to be able to have enough of a bankroll to make that happen, but barely. Mm-hmm. I don't know what your position, Lola, was when you opened up your studio, but I had to...
Oh, sorry, go on.
Yeah, no, like I had essentially leveraged myself to... I think I had $1,000 in the bank to cover my personal at-home rent before I was officially in bankruptcy mode. And then you just kind of sit there on opening day hoping to God.
Hoping people show up.
That's, you know, and then after that, it just kind of steamrolls over and there's nothing to really be worried about. So... I think one of the things that I really wanted to kind of get across during this podcast is if you are a piercer that feels like they're being stifled in that environment. I mean, it's not like a license to just like, yeah, go out, print your own money. But, you know, like maybe take a look at where you are now and where you want to be, like literally in 5 years mm-hmm. and see if that's not like a situation that you can kind of make for yourself. Because, you know, I've never been more fulfilled in my career than I am now. You know, I feel a little bit lucky in the sense that, like, this is the only time that I'd ever experienced burnout in an almost, at that point would have been about like almost like a 16-year career. And, you know, the moment I created my own space where, you know, like I felt like I could flourish under my own banner, you know, this weight's kind of getting lifted off your chest.
It's easy to lean into resentment of, they won't do this, they won't do that. It's not your shop, you know, it's their shop. And as soon as you let go of the idea that it's yours and realize you've been putting all of your hard work in to someone else's business and they're not even taking you up on some of the strongest ideas, you realize it's actually nothing personal. It's just, it's not your business. It's not a family, you know? Yeah.
Does that kind of resonate with what you were thinking?
Yeah, like 100%. You know, like ultimately the reputation of the work is going to be yours.
Yeah.
Right. But, you know, again, you bring up a lot of really, really, really good points, especially, you know, the idea of almost trying to like salvage that relationship. Yeah. Right. You know, when you have an idea, it's not just an idea. It's a well thought out, well orchestrated plan. Like you almost have a business plan in mind that you go to bring to somebody else looking for essentially like a financier. And when that doesn't happen, again, like a lot of that work that you probably felt that you, like, you know, I worked so hard to have all these ideas, to have it all fleshed out, to have it all ready to go. And then it just kind of gets, you know, poo-pooed at, you know, the 11th hour. But like at the end of the day, all of that work that you put into that plan, you know, the instant that you decide that, you know, this is the direction that I want to go, your hard work's kind of, in a sense, already done, right? You have that business plan. You like, you know what direction that you're wanting to go.
And a lot of this stuff, you have to transition into it. Like the lines you're bringing in, like, you know, you can't really necessarily bring in gold and diamonds on day one. Right. You might need to bring in threadless, internal thread, titanium. Base. Yeah, alienate the client base. But also, like, if you waste the studio owner's money, you might not get a second opportunity for another jewelry order.
Like, or your own money if you're in the position of building out your the studio yourself. Right?
Yeah.
And I think like having those realistic expectations of like, you know, you might have your ideas of what you want to do, but you might not have it on day one where you know, growth is going to be this like linear, consistent path. You know, I look at, you know, like what I have in my studio is fairly, you know, like ostentatious. You know, we've got a nice like jewelry selection, but you know, on day one, my gold selection was a thimbleful, you know, and you know, you kind of have those ideas of where you want to grow to. But you know, again, if you have that plan in mind, you know, like you understand how to get to where you want to be, you know, that you don't just assume that you're just going to. Yeah, I mean, I think honestly, just like, you know, being honest with yourself, like setting those boundaries, you know, having those open lines of communication, it's okay to get shut down, you know, like, you know, like the entire like impetus of our entire industry is like informed consent, you know what I mean? And like, no is an answer, and no is a very, very, very loud answer. And if you're hearing no, you kind of know what position that you're in, right? So, you know, if you have those ideas and they're well fleshed out, well thought out, and you know, you kind of have someone saying like, this isn't us. I mean, understand that is the answer. Like that's not where you're going to get to be in that studio. And if you really have that push and that drive to accomplish it, then you kind of have to start to, you know, look outside that studio and more within yourself as to how to like bring that into reality.
Yeah.
I guess I would say, you know, try and let go of hostility and negative energy if it's something that's no longer affecting you. I mean, relationships in studios are different, and there are some that are truly just complete train wrecks, and you can't blame people for wanting to talk about it at all.
Yeah.
But there are also a lot of situations where if you're speaking with someone and they're saying, oh, I worked this place, but it was shit, and I worked this place, and it was shit, and I worked this place, and it was shit. It starts to form an idea in your head of maybe you have some issues yourself there. Yeah, you know, like
the
maybe
lowest common denominator.
And, and so it's difficult because I actually had someone ask me on Instagram a while ago. It was in one of those ask me anything anonymous things. And they said, do you ever, or how do you feel about the earlier work that you did in your career, meaning using external threaded jewelry and stuff that's not as good as it is now? How do you feel about it? Or, you know, like, what does that mean to you? And I was like, I honestly feel proud of all of the work that I've done. I feel proud of that work because I was always improving. I was always getting better. It was industry standard in the country that I lived in. Not just the city, but the entire island. It was industry standard. And then I pushed for improvement year after year after year.
Yeah. If I can give any advice to piercers, it's, don't just pluck a thought out of the air or off of social media and then throw it at your manager or your studio owner. Take the thought home with you, flesh out the thought, think about the thought, revisit the thought. And once you have a formalized, finalized thought, then bring it to your manager, then bring it to your studio owner. If you bring someone a less than fully formed idea, you're probably not going to get the same consideration as if you had something akin to a soft business plan. Yeah.
Come with a solution, not a problem.
Right.
Yeah. Like you're a fully functioning, autonomous, fully realized human being. But the thing is, so is everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
As Deacon said, if you feel that strongly about it, bet on yourself. If you believe in your ideas that strongly, why are you giving them to someone else for free? So once you kind of connect in your head, you're like, oh my God, these ideas have value and I'm just giving them to other people for free.
Right. But yeah, like sometimes it's not burnout. Like you're not tired of piercing. You're not tired of the industry. You're not tired of the job. You're just tired of the environment that you find yourself within.
So. Yeah. The whole like the grass is greener on the other side cliche. I also like the grass is greener where you water it. So it's like, if you can be effective in communication, maybe you can make it the environment that you want. But if not, you know, it might be time to move on. Yeah. All right. Well, I think this is probably a good place to wrap it up.
Sounds good.
So I'm glad that we finally got to coordinate a time.
It only took about 2 months, but
yeah. But you know, once again, for people, like, what's your studio, social media, contact info?
I am Wonderland Studios in Ontario, Canada, Kitchener, Waterloo, if anybody cares. My Instagram is very straight edge. It is through X, the X dust. it is what it is. It's like a literal translation. My name is Through the Dust. But at through X, the X Dust on Instagram, Wonderland Tattoo Studios in Kitchener, Waterloo, Ontario, Canada.
And who are you, young lady?
Oh, I'm just waiting for a bus.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I have been Ryan. That has been Lola. This has been Deacon. And, thank you for listening to another episode of the Piercing Wizard Podcast.
Bye.
Have a good day.
For more information about the show, visit piercingwizardpodcast.com or like Piercing Wizard Podcast on Facebook. For more info about your host, visit precisionbodyarts.com or search Ryan PBA on Facebook, Instagram, and Tumblr. If you enjoy the show, you can subscribe on iTunes, Apple Podcast, and Google Play. Music by Benny B. Blanco. Show copyright 2017, Precision Body Arts LLC, all rights reserved.